Good evening, and... Oh. Good evening, and... Oh. Good evening, and... Good evening.
Well, there'll be another edition of What's My Line at the same time next week. But now, Film 77.
Hello. Well, on Film 77 tonight, we'll be looking at the 17th remake of Felix Aylmer. We'll be showing you a short piece of Roger Moore. And we'll also be previewing the new Elizabeth Taylor double feature. And if we're very, very lucky, we're hoping to look in on the shooting of Tatum. But first, we're devoting the whole of tonight's programme to the BBC's first ever motion picture for radio. The film sequel to the humorous wireless programme, Son of the Berkish Way. Just a few of the glittering stars like Joe Kendall, Chris Emmett, Nigel Rees and Fred Harris, but most of them don't. Well, later on I'll be chatting to lots and lots of the many fascinating people involved of Croydon. But first, let's start off with a clip from the film.
England, 1603, a country in terror. And as Queen Glenda I prepares to breathe her last, having as yet named no successor to the throne, the vultures gather.
Come, my lords. You know that I, your flower of flowers, your silken mistress, am snuffing it. Listen. My noble Duke of Bristol, 'tis no use. I sink by the hour. What is this evil monster sent to plague me? I beseech you to comfort your beloved queen.
No thanks, I'd rather stay here with you.
Ah, you are a true and faithful friend, and I shall remember you always. I truly, your name will forever lie embedded in my heart, Northumberland.
Bristol, your majesty.
Oh, very well. Your name will forever lie embedded in my Bristol. Come, I grow weary of this life. I crave amusement. Send in the court surgeon.
Very good, your majesty.
Send in the court surgeon.
Good morrow, your royal highness. Behold, first of all, I proceed to make unto an incision here in the leg just above the head of the femur, the best to delicately expose the gluteus maximus muscle of the upper buttock. Next, prithee observe, while I gently insert the scalpel beneath the tendon of the rectus femoris between the ilium and patella. Thus enabling me to subtly detach the lateral artery from its anterior capillary.
Stop, stop. I'm afraid this isn't making me laugh very much. The gag crackers ball did that ages ago. Northumberland, take this man and what's left of his friend away, will you? And have them hung from the highest tower.
This is a bungalow, ma'am.
A bungalow? You mean to tell me I'm living in a bungalow?
Yes, ma'am.
But I thought I had Cardinal Wolsey's Hampton Court.
That was just an accident with a napkin ring, ma'am.
Very well. He shall feel an even more painful torture.
You don't mean...
Yes. Take him to the short-sighted Conker's Player.
No, I prithee, not that.
Away! No. Put a short-sighted Conker's Player with him, guards.
No, good me. No, I prithee, no.
buying an old woman makes a change from tomatoes. But tell me, what news of the plots to succeed me on the throne of England?
Tis in no wise good, Your Majesty. The Lords Leicester, Warwick, and Monmouth are at this very moment conspiring to name their own choice as your successor, the young Prince Eunuch of Gloucester.
Prince Eunuch? But what has he got that I haven't?
Not a lot, Your Majesty.
Ah, fies me. The royal astrologers say I am to die at noon. Oh, tragic that I never had a child.
Well, we've still got 20 minutes, Your Majesty.
Soft! And put that away. I hear voices without. What dirty work is this afoot?
It is the Lord of Hendon Central.
Correct, snivelling knave, and I, Lord of Hendon Central, am here to claim the throne for the Earl of Mornington Crescent. Bastard son of Prince Goodge Street.
Impudent scoundrel. Think you still that I will surrender the throne to the Northern Line? Not while I have a breath left in me.
Such empty gestures do you proud, good queen. But the Northern Line will be installed as monarch. Know you that the Duke of South Wimbledon is already massing forces on the border with the Lords Tufnell Park, Tottenham Court Road, and change at St. Pancras for Arnos Grove?
Not so fast, Hendon. Your rebel forces have already been routed by those who would see the one rightful heir as king.
Damnation! You don't mean...
Correct, Alf Tupper, the tough of the track.
Alf Tupper? I know no whit of this man. Who is he?
Come, come, Your Majesty. You know as well as I that the noble Tupper is none other than a character in The Victor.
What? The Victor Boy's comic?
Of course.
But what claim has he to the English throne?
What claim? Is it not obvious even to such a simpleton as yourself? Why, he has to finish a welding job at the forge. But he gets a lift in a coal lorry and turns up on time at the racetrack, eating fish and chips, of course.
I still don't see...
Ignore him, Your Majesty. You must support Essex and his client, Captain Birdseye.
Nay, Your Majesty. Back Robert Cecil, champion of the Wonder Horse, with Bela Lugosi as Lord Protector.
Silence, you fools! At this very moment, Colonel Blink, the short-sighted gink, marches on London. With a spherical plum pudding and a pile of mashed potatoes with two sausages sticking out each side.
I have heard enough. Now you shall hear my choice. Herald, prepare to read the royal will.
Very good, Your Majesty. I shall read the results in reverse order. Tupper, Alf, place Thrid in. Junction, Wilsdon, place second in. Place first in, and... Dean Martin. Dean Martin? My men will not stand for that.
And nor will mine.
And with opposition thus mounted to the Duke of Dean Martin, so...
Cut!
Hold your places there, everybody. Okay, take the narrator out and wheel his stand-in into position, would you? Okay, right. Off you go.
Son of Berkey's Kingmaker sketch, take two.
Dean Martin... My men will not stand for that.
And nor will mine.
And with opposition thus mounted to the Duke of Dean Martin, so began the wars of cirrhosis.
Cut! Okay, that'll do for now, folks. Okay, I'd take five, would you?
Oh,
Hal Krapsenheimer, you're directing this film version of Son of Berkis.
Uh-huh.
I noticed you used a stand-in for that punchline just then. Why was that?
Well, let's face it, would you dare say it?
Well, no, I see what you mean. This isn't the first radio program you've directed for the widescreen, is it?
Oh, no. I did the Tony Blackburn show, Not Now I'm Listening, and also the Men from the Ministry.
Oh, quite, yeah. But have you done anything else apart from disaster movies?
No, not so far, no.
Well, let's move now into the studio next door, where I think you're just about to shoot another item for later in the film.
That's correct, yeah. Right, Dennis, roll him. Great, Dennis, great. Now roll the cameras.
Son of Berkis, board meeting sketch, take one.
Good evening, and may I say...
Hold it. What colour's that, good evening?
What?
What colour is that, good evening? I'm the Technicolor colour consultant. I have to know what colour it is.
Well, it's not any colour, it's just good evening.
She's right, I'm afraid. Yeah, we have to know what the colour is in case it clashes with his tie. Makeup!
Yes, Mr. Casting Couch?
Dab a bit of red on that good evening, would you?
Oh, very good.
Thank you, sir.
Son of Berkis, board meeting sketch, take two.
Slightly crimson with a hint of vermilion. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And may I say how especially sprunnered I am tonight to welcome Spreech and every one of you to this, the 961st meeting of the Royal Society for quite arbitrarily sticking the letters SPR under the sprigginnings of Spurton words. Thank you. Well, straight away, I'd now like to sprawl on my secretary to commence today's business.
We have an application from the word pimple, sir. A request that it should have the letters SPR stuck in front of it to make it into sprimple.
So there we are, gentlemen. Pimple into sprimple. Can I have your views on this one, please, Sprimson?
Well, personally, I would suggest that we play this one a bit low-key for the prime being. We're not sure how sprutable it would be for an SPR transfer allocation at this sprument in time.
You mean you think we should perhaps commission a special Spurvey report to investigate the, as it were, pimpular pros and cons before we commit ourselves?
Sprapsolutely. In the meantime, we could just spray it safe, give it, say, just an extra S or an R.
And make it into spimple, you mean?
Or primple, even. Yes. That way I think we'd keep our sproptions open.
May I ask a question here, Mr. Chairman?
Certainly, Sprackenbottom. What is it?
What exactly is the point of all this?
I'm sorry?
What exactly is the point of sticking extra letters onto the front of words?
The point? The point? He's asking what the point is. Tell him, Sprimson.
Pardon, sir?
Tell him what the point of it is.
The point of it... Well, the point of putting the letters SPR onto the words, you see, is... It gives it a bit more of a spruff feel to it.
Well, what's the point of that?
Well, it makes words like dumpling into sprumpling, you see?
No, I'm afraid I don't, really.
Well, it makes the word doodle become sprudle. No, do you see?
No.
Look, let me explain. By putting the letters S-P-R onto the front of the word...
Yes?
It makes tunkle into sprunkle.
But there's no such word as sprunkle.
Well, there's no such word as tunkle either, come to that. You're going to start nitspring.
This sketch nearly finished.
Almost, yes. What's the next application?
The word sprass, sir.
Sprass?
Yes, sprass, sir. It's supplying to have the letters S-P-R removed from it to revert to its original...
I see, sprass. Well, I think...
A cut. Stand in. Roll him.
I see. Sprass. Well, I think we better just sit on that one for a bit.
Okay, great. Well, that's it for today, studio.
Oh, God.
Mr. Casting Couch, could I have a word with you?
Not now. I've got a dubbing session, you see.
A dubbing session? Dubbing a radio program?
Uh-huh.
This I must see. What exactly are you dubbing here?
These are the first rushes of the Kingmaker sketch, you remember, Queen Glenda. We're dubbing them into rugby language.
Rugby language?
Right. You see, with involved historical dramas, we have to translate them so the average rugby player can understand.
Oh, I see.
Okay, roll the film and cast standby to Superdose rugby voices.
England, 1603.
Widnes, 1603. And as Rochdale Hornets prepare to go on field, minus their wing three-quarter, who went down at home last week with an injury to his rather vulnerable bits, the vultures gather.
List, my noble looker, teeth of no use. The left prop from Old Kingston Rovers sinks by the hour. What is this evil monster sent to plague me?
Well, I'd rather run it up than there.
What was that?
That was a special effect.
Oh, an explosion.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps I could turn to Amanda Smoth here, the special effects expert. Tell me, Amanda, how exactly did you manage to get that incredibly realistic effect of an explosion?
We blew them all up.
What actually blew them all up?
Oh, no. Mercilessly blew them all up. You see, it's a very tricky business, special effects. I expect you're probably wondering how we got the effect of that chairman sitting in the chair at that board meeting earlier on.
Well, not really, no.
Well, what we did, you see, was to first of all film the chair against a keyed-out colour using the colour separation overlay technique, and then onto that we later superimposed the separate image of the man squatting in thin air in a sitting position, so that when the two frames were married, the man actually appeared to be sitting in the chair.
Miss Smoth, I understand you're about to be fired.
That is correct, yes. But first I have to create the special effect of this intermission. Excuse me.
There will now be a short intermission.
I remember that Saturday after war was over. Me mam shoved me off on push bike and I skidded right downhill and I didn't half land me a thump on old cobbles. I didn't do me legs much good either. Then I struggled to the bakery to see Ed Baker, who opened oven doors, pulled out half a dozen golden brown heads and said, "Here, lad, this'll build up the feather tonight when he comes back up from underground."
Yes, thinking of going underground, then come to Stiffco. Stiffco, as good for you today as it's always been.
Hello again. Well, I've at last now managed to get hold of the producer of this epic picture, Son of Berkis, Mr. Ken Philistine.
Hi.
Ken, there's one overriding question that's been puzzling me ever since I arrived on the set.
Fire away.
Well, I noticed that the entire cast of this film do, in fact, all have a lemon, as it were, stuck up their noses.
Yeah.
Is this intentional at all?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Why?
Well, I believe that the only people who have experienced the citrus fruit nostril conflict can understand the true nature of the film.
And what is the true nature of the film?
Well, lemons stuck up people's noses, basically.
I see. Are you sure, in fact, that this is not just, in effect, a facet of your unusual, your distinctive... You're being a raving loony.
No. After all, what is radio for other than an audible lemon stuck up the nose of the British public?
Mr. Philistine, it's quite well known, isn't it, that you have in the past been criticised for your rather, well, fruit up an orifice orientated views on direction.
That is just the ignorance of the press.
Then what about your last film, 2001, A Pomegranate Crammed in the Auditory Canal?
That was dramatic license.
Dramatic license?
No, not dramatic license, the other thing.
Fruit stuck up an orifice?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
I see. Then, of course, there's your previous film, Orca, killer whale with a pineapple stuffed down its blowhole. Isn't this an obsession?
It is not an obsession.
Then what are you doing with that grapefruit?
Nothing.
You were?
I was not. I was just blowing my nose.
Blowing your nose?
Yeah. On this fat yellow monogrammed handkerchief.
Monogrammed? Your initial isn't Jaffa.
It's my maiden name.
I'm sorry, I don't believe you. If this isn't an obsession, why did you have a row with Robert Redford when he was to star in this film?
That was unprovoked. I gave him his lemon, he refused to wear it.
Refused?
Yeah, he told me where I could put it. Which only goes to show, doesn't it?
What?
Well, these actors just don't understand the subtleties of direction. Now, if you'll just excuse me, please, I have a rather important scene to shoot. Okay, everybody, take your places for the telegram scene. Come on, now, move it, move it, move it. Come on. Ah, oh, what the hell's all this I'm treading in? Where's the studio manager?
Here, Mr. Philistine.
What's the goddamn meaning of all this muck on the set? I asked for a house in Catford.
What, sir?
A house in Catford.
Sorry, Mr. Philistine. I thought you said a house in cat food.
Well, I don't suppose anyone will notice a difference. Okay. Roll 'em.
Son of Berkis, telegram scene. Take one.
Coming. Yes?
Telegram, madam.
Oh, no. Oh, dearie me. Whatever could it be? Oh, God, what's happened to the... Oh, no. Quick, where is it?
What?
Oh, the telegram.
Oh, no. My name is Telegram, madam.
Well, what do you want?
Well, I brought you a telegram, madam. Are you Mrs. Edith of 37 Edith Road, Edith?
Yeah, what do you want?
Well, I represent the Little Ones Football Pools and Professional Logicians Company.
Football pools?
And Professional Logicians.
You mean I won the pools?
Well, let me put it this way. Either you have won the pools, or it isn't raining.
Aye? But it is raining.
Exactly. So by connecting two statements together, one true, one false, by the operation or, what can we presume about the composite proposition?
I'm sorry, I don't understand you.
All right, think of it like this. Either haddocks can swim in porridge, or you have won the pools. But some fish catch influenza in porridge, and haddocks are some fish. Therefore, this statement has the appearance of being false.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about this. Although some fish catch influenza in porridge, and haddocks are some fish, they don't necessarily need to wear their scarves and rub their chests with Vic, since we cannot connect these statements into one tautology, because the second is only partially convertible.
No, have I won the pools or not?
You see the problem. Some problem, but only some problem. Therefore, the rest of the problem is somewhere else. Somewhere, but not always. Somehow, some way. Some enchanted evening. You may meet a stranger. You may meet a stranger.
Telegram.
Oh, yes, sir?
You're fired.
Oh. You mean some of me are fired?
No.
But, sir, that proposition is not qualified.
And neither are you, so get out. I'm so sorry, madam.
Oh, that's all right.
Oh, no. My name is So Sorry, madam. I represent the Little Ones Football Pools and Elocution Teachers Company.
So I have won the pools?
No.
How do you mean, no? Have I won the pools?
No. Have I won the pools?
Oh. Have I won the pools?
Again?
Have I won the pools?
Again?
You silly fools, look, have I won the pools?
I think she's got it.
My God, she's got it.
You stupid lot, now have I won or not?
She's really got it. She's really...
Cut! Okay, that's lovely, right? Straight into the closing signature tune, please. Come along now. Bring on the orchestra and its conductor, Andre Previn. Come on, bring him in. Ah, hi, Andre. It's great to have you conducting our music.
Thank you, Ken.
By the way, which orchestra are you using for this film?
Eric Pode of Croydon.
Oh. Well, right. Okay, then. Take it away. Eric Pode of Croydon, conducted by Andre Previn.
Diddly-dum-dum. Diddly-dum-dum-da-dum. Diddly-dum-dum-dee. Diddly-dum-dum.
And the string section.
Da-dum. Diddly-dum-dum. Diddly-dum-da-dee.
Now the woodwind.
Diddly-dum-dum-da-dum.
Fade up the brass section. Right. Cue the announcement.
Well, that brings us to a climax. This week's blockbusting film classic, Lesson 23, Son of the Bunkie. That's right. The parts were played as follows. Joe Kendall, Fred Harris. Chris Emmett, Nigel Reese. Nigel Reese, Joe Kendall. And Fred Harris, Chris Emmett. Sorry about that, but on our budget, we couldn't afford the real people. Yes, if you'd like to find that elusive road to a real epic, simply write now to Epic Road of Croydon, and we'll send you a screenplay by Andrew Marshall and David Renwick by Return of Post. Tonight's coaches were all cast by producer John Lloyd of Europe. That's all for now, folks. See you at the Academy Awards and happy cineramic living!
And the horns.
Dish.
Well, there we are. That completes our look at the filming of the Berkey's Way to Dynamic Living. So until next week from Film 77, good night.
And that's all there is to it, you see.
Fascinating. Perhaps I should just explain to the listeners that I'm now standing in the Berkey's Way's false endings studio, where we just run off that little bit to give you an idea of what goes on. Fred, perhaps we could just see how you do some of these trick endings of yours, could we?
Oh, I'm sorry, I'd love to, but I think any moment now we're going to run out of time.
Oh, what is...
Well, hopefully the Berkey's Way will find more time when they return to the air at the same time next week. Well, in Pick of the Week, later tonight, Margaret Howard will be providing you with another chance to hear this week's stunning performance by Gladys Knight and the Pips.
That was marvellous. Tell me, how do you always manage to make it sound so realistic?
Well, the trick, of course, is in using very authentic-sounding continuity announcers.
Oh, I see.
Most of our dummy announcers are so good, you can't tell the difference between them and the real thing. Here, let me demonstrate.
Well, I'll try. You can hear that edition of The Berkey's Way on Tuesday at 6:30 on Radio 4. And if anyone would like to see The Berkey's Way being recorded, please write to the ticket unit, BBC, Broadcasting House, London W1A, 1AA.